Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
This is the Growing the Game podcast, and I am Michael Ball, and we'll get to our first guest in a second. I want to thank our sponsor right now, Mako Collision Repair in Regina. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. If you'd like to get on board and sponsor the Growing the Game podcast, you can always email me, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Our first guest, Regina's own John Ryan of the Seattle Seahawks. How are you, John?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being on. Okay, buddy, you're a podcast aficionado. You do your own podcast. Tell us about it, and you got any tips for me?
Yeah, I do a podcast back in Seattle that's produced by the Seahawks. It's called Kicking It with John and Greg. It's available on iTunes. It's just an idea that kind of came up over a couple of beers with my buddy, how, you know, most of my great ideas start. and we just had an idea. My buddy's, about the same age as me. Lives in a Seattle suburb, and we're good friends, and at the same time we live almost opposite lives. He has a couple kids and a real estate job. I'm married, definitely we're not having kids. I play in the NFL, so even though we're so much alike, we're so much different. That's kind of how the podcast started. So we talk a little bit of football, but a lot about life.
Okay, so John, I've lost track. How many years for you now as a professional punter, including your time with the Blue Bombers?
This is 14.
So do you pinch yourself? I mean, you're earning money and good money to play a kid sport.
Yeah, I think it's something that I'll never take for granted. I still still think it's so cool to be able to wake up every morning and go kick footballs, go work out, go hang out with, 62 other idiots like myself. It's a lot of fun. And, every season, every week that I get to do that is just really a blessing.
John Ryan joining us here, Regina's own John Ryan. We'll get into that in a second. A member of the Seattle Seahawks, Super Bowl champion, and nobody else in this province can say that. John, what was your first memory of football?
I remember my first memory is probably when I was about 4 or 5, maybe 3, my mom buying me a football at the Zellers in Northwest Regina, and just, running around the yard by myself playing with a football. And shortly after that, I just remember, watching Rider games, as early as, probably 4 or 5. My dad started taking me to the Labor Day Classic, and then when I was 8 years old in 1990, We bought season tickets, and then, I was a season ticket holder with the Riders until the day I was drafted in 2004. So I think that a lot of memories have to do with the Rough Riders growing up in Regina.
Yeah, John, what turned you on to kicking? And I know I talked to you one time, and you said you used to punt the ball till the it got dark, and even after that. So tell us that story.
Yeah, I think I just growing up, I was obsessed with football, and every day after school, my brother and I would just go, and we'd play with all the neighbor kids, and after an hour, 2 hours, sometimes they'd get tired of it, and then it'd end up my brother and I were just playing catch, or games we'd invent, one-on-one football. Then eventually he was a few years younger than me, so he'd get tired of that, and then I was just basically every day left alone with the football. And when you're alone with the football, all you can really do is start kicking it, and that's what I started doing, and just really quickly became really obsessed with it. Just loved it so much, and it's one of those things that I could do for hours and hours and hours and never get sick of it. I think that's still the way I am. There's not one day, as I said, playing pro football for 14 years, there wasn't one day that I've woken up and said, man, I don't feel like punting today. It's every day I get out on the field, I can't wait to do it. So it's just something that's been an obsession my whole life, and I love it.
To be good, do you think you have to be obsessed with something to be really good at it?
I think you do, probably at this level. These aren't a bunch of guys that just like really like football. They love football, and they're obsessed. As you said, they've all put in their 10,000 hours to get as good as they are at what we do. And I think that's just kind of the way it has to be able to perform at this level with anything. Whether it be a doctor or a violinist or a pro football player, I think you have to kind of put in that time and really absolutely love what you do.
John Ryan, do you have an estimate on how many balls you've kicked in your life?
Oh, I don't know. It has to be seven figures by now. You know, it's a lot. I've never really sat down to figure it out, but it's a lot.
You've probably kicked the from Regina to Seattle and back a couple of times, hey?
Probably a few times, yeah.
So, any like, does the back bug you? Does the hip bug you? Does the knee bug you?
No. You know, I've been lucky with injuries. I've had a few here and there, and. Yeah, but I have no aches and pains really. You know, little stuff here and there. But I was just talking to my coach yesterday, and you know, he was trying to tell me to, you know, stop kicking so much in practice. And I was like, man, I feel better. You know, I'll be 36 in 2 weeks. I feel better now than I did at 25 or even younger than that. So I mean, it's one of those things where I want to keep going because I don't feel the side effects of it yet.
You weren't just quote unquote a kicker. Like, you were a good lacrosse player, I think a hockey player, and you were an unbelievable receiver with the Regina Rams. But when you're there and your coach tells you don't kick so much, maybe don't kick in practice. Do you feel like you got to kick to be like, you know, I don't want to say a legitimate member of the team, but to say you're all in too. I'm here to work out with you guys just the same.
I think maybe about 10 years ago I felt that way. You know, I felt like I was constantly trying to prove myself as an athlete. And now the coaches and the other guys looking have accepted that I am an athlete. And I think with that, the game has changed so much that, you know, even when I came in, you kind of saw, you know, those a little bit overweight, chunky punters that weren't necessarily athletes. Now all these young kids coming out of college that are absolutely crushing the ball, you know, they're all athletes. So it's good to have seen kind of that transition going from, you know, a position where people maybe not thought that guys were athletic. And, you know, there's still some of those stereotypes from, you know, unknowledgeable fans. But
yeah,
the game has evolved so much that these guys are real athletes now.
Besides the link in Seattle, where else do you like to kick? Where's your favorite place to punt?
I love it in Arizona. You know, it's an indoor stadium. They have real grass. They have great grass. It's always kind of one of my favorites, as well as, you know, the new stadium in Dallas. You know, pretty much anything that's enclosed inside, I always enjoy going to.
Who's instrumental in your career coming up that you like to remember here on this Growing the Game podcast? Because it is about amateur football. Who do you like to remember? Maybe a scout, maybe somebody that found you, a coach?
I think going all the way back to, you know, Regina Minor Football, playing Pee Wee football when I was, you know, 10 years old. It was we had a coach named Terry Demchuk, who was just a great coach and really kind of just really was instrumental in me like becoming even more in love with the game. You know, really had a lot of fun doing it, and then, you know, growing, you know, keep on going forward from there. You know, Ron Cherkis, mm-hmm. At Sheldon Williams, and then obviously, you know, Frank and Bernie in at the University of Regina. You know, those guys really. Frank was huge in just, you know, letting me have those, you know, crazy dreams of playing in the NFL. You know, at the time, you know, it hadn't been done in Saskatchewan for a long time. I don't think anyone in Regina had ever done it. And Frank just kind of said, you know, small town Saskatchewan or small town Texas, it's no different. You know, they're gonna if you're good enough, they're gonna find you. So he kind of let me have those huge dreams and kind of helped me like that. And, you know, I think, you know, Frank's probably one of the biggest reasons I was able to play in the NFL.
Is that a great message? I mean, that's a great message from Frank and Bernie. Is that kind of the message you like to give to the younger athletes if they're listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, dream big. You know, it doesn't matter where you're from. And, you know, my dad was always big, you know, kind of saying the same thing as Frank. He said, you know, it doesn't matter where you're playing. You know, if you're good enough, they're going to find, you know, kind of never, you know, I was kind of, you know, lived by that and, you know, kind of never gave up on that dream. And, you know, eventually it happened.
John, you're also big in giving back to the community, suiting up the Mighty Mites players in Regina at the RMF level. Tell us about that and your initiative there.
Yeah, we started a few years ago, an initiative called Gear Up with John Ryan. And we helped to start the Mighty Mite division of 8 and 9 year olds in the Regina Minor Football League. You know, just making sure they have proper equipment. You know, there's so much going on right now with the head injuries, and, you know, people kind of debating whether or not they should allow their children to play football. And I think it's so important, first of all, to start playing football at a young age, tackle football, as well as to have the proper equipment and the proper coaching. You know, and I think that's a big deal for me. And I feel like these kids, if they learn to tackle properly, learn how to play the game properly at 8 and 9 years old, they're not all of a sudden starting football in ninth or tenth grade when, you know, they've just hit puberty and all of a sudden their body's a weapon and they have no clue what to do with it. And that's really where the danger comes into the game.
That's a really good point, John, and I've talked about that numerous times. For you, why is, you know, if you could pass a message on to parents and kids, why is football, in your opinion, you know, the greatest sport in the world? Why do you like it? Why should a kid play football?
There's just no better team sport. You know, you can watch a sport. There's, you know, I love all sports, but you can watch a sport like basketball where you just see one player take over the entire game, whereas football, you know, 12 guys aside in Canada or 11 aside, you need every single player on both sides of the ball and special teams. You know, there's so many moving parts to it. It just teaches young guys and, you know, old guys in the game like me that, you know, really how to be a teammate, how to, you know, have someone depend on you, how to depend on other people. And also, I always said, it's one of the greatest sports when you can have, you know, a 5'6", 150-pound kicker and a 400-pound O-lineman playing on the same field, both contributing in equal amounts. I mean, I just think it's one of the coolest games on earth.
That's well put. Okay, before we wrap up, let's talk about your team. It's kind of been an up-and-down season so far for the Seattle Seahawks as you're headed into a Monday night game, I believe, against the Falcons. So tell me, you know, how you're feeling about your squad. I know a big injury to Richard Sherman.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're having a good year so far. You know, it always could be better, but definitely could be worse. You know, we're sitting at 6-3, and we're in a pretty good position right now where we control our own destiny. And, you know, obviously a big game coming up here on Monday night against a very good team coming to Seattle in Atlanta. But yeah, we had a game last Thursday night and had a few bad injuries. Obviously, losing you know, Richard Sherman, a guy we've played with for years now, and really kind of the one of the backbones of this team is definitely a hard pill to swallow, having lost him.
Where do you stand on Thursday night football in the short weeks like that?
You know, playing as long as I have and kind of seeing what these guys go through week to week just to get ready for a game going from Sunday to Sunday, is most of them, especially, you know, linebackers and linemen and running backs, their bodies aren't feeling right until about Friday. You know, and a lot of them, you know, don't feel 100% until Saturday. You know, it's what these guys put their bodies through is incredible. You know, and to have to go back out there on Thursday, I personally don't think it's safe. I mean, for my position, it doesn't matter. You know, I could play every third day for the next 10 years, wouldn't bother me. But these guys, what they put their bodies through, I just don't think they're ready to go on Thursday yet.
Okay, John, last question. We'll wrap it up on a high note here and a fun note. It's Christmas season. I know in the States it gets kicked off with Thanksgiving, but back in Canada here, your favorite Christmas gift maybe growing up, what was the one thing you remember from your, you know, growing up days as a kid getting for Christmas?
Oh, man, a couple come to mind. I got a Chicago Bears football helmet when I was pretty young, and I remember Steve got a 49ers helmet. I know they were just like replica helmets, but we thought they were the real deal, so we just line up all Christmas and probably for months after that just run headfirst at each other across the whole basement over and over again. And so that was one of my favorite gifts, and then I remember getting a Wayne Gretzky tabletop hockey game. It was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, but I'd hate when the puck got stuck in the corner and you had to dig it out with your fingers. Didn't you hate that?
yeah, exactly. I think that's why the Nintendo or the PlayStation kind of take over from that now with kids.
All right, John, thanks for this. We appreciate it, and maybe we'll check in with you down the line and hopefully headed to another Super Bowl appearance. Thanks for this, John.
No problem. Thank you.
Pleased to be joined by one of the great coaches in our province. That would be Garrett Glassrud out in Shaunavon, and the Shaunavon Shadows are our champions. Tell us about that, Garrett.
Yeah, you know, it's a great feeling here. We've been able to pull off two provincial championships here in the past 3 years. It's building a lot of excitement here in the community, getting a lot of help from you know, our sponsors and the local pride here, and it's just doing great things for us.
Guys knocked off Indian Head to win the 9-man football championship. Tell us about that game.
You know, it was an exciting game. A little nerve-wracking for the coaches, I'm sure, but the fans loved it. You know, it was 7-0 there at halftime for Indian Head. I believe it was 7-7 at the end of the third quarter, and we finished the game strong there, finished up 24-7 to take the win.
Garrett, tell me about some of the guys on the team. I know a nine-man game, so you got a short roster, but tell us about some of the boys, because this podcast is about talking about local athletes and coaches.
you know, we do get a lot of multi-sport guys here. They're just great athletes in general, and they play, you know, baseball, track and field, basketball, hockey. But over the last 5 or 6 years here, we really turned the tide in trying to get these guys interested in football. You know, they're interested in learning about the sport, knowing more about it. They're going to summer camps in the off season, that kind of thing. But it's paying off here now, obviously.
Tell us about your playing background, Garrett Glassford.
Well, I finished up, played 4 years of high school here in Shaunavon. So, you know, it's great to come back and coach for your old school. After that, though, I went on and received a scholarship to play at Montana State Northern and spent 4 years playing in the defensive line there. And then ended up, you know, bouncing around a little bit here in the CFL for one season and then finally come home.
Yeah, so how does a guy go from Shaunavon and nine-man football to make it to Montana and then get to the CFL? How did that path take you there?
You know, well, I mean, it's at the time, I guess, social media was an almost non-existent thing. So for me, I started going to football camps when I was in grade 9, 10, 11, that sort of thing. And a lot of them took me south across the border because we are only, you know, 40, 50 miles here from the U.S. border. So I was partaking in those and spread out across North Dakota, Montana, and just trying to get noticed by some of the university coaches there.
Garrett, you know, you obviously got to be what's the word I'm looking for? You got to be a symbol or kind of a guy that your players would emulate if they want to continue their football career. It's kind of nice to have a guy like you running the program, you know, do the eyeball test. And, you know, I imagine that's your message. Look, you can, just because you're in Shaunavon doesn't mean your football career has to end here.
You know, that's a big thing, I guess. You know, we've got great athletes here, and, you know, Shaunavon's known as a hockey community. I'm sure everybody would consider it that. I just like being able to allow these young guys to know that there's another possibility out there for them. And, you know, I've had coaches in the last couple of years here that I played with and coached alongside, and they also have taken that opportunity to move on and play junior football or play university here in Canada. And so they're excited to be able to show that to our young crowd.
Why do you like the coach, Garrett?
You know, I'm just passionate about the game. I couldn't stay away from it. When I was done football as a player, I took over kind of trying to learn how to become a coach. And now being as a head coach here, it's probably more exciting, I think, than being able to play. And I just love being around the team.
Now, you're not some guy that just went and played football and went to Montana and then you decide, you know what, I'm going to come back and be good for the community and I'm going to coach. You have a pretty good coaching background. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, it's I guess I've just worked hard to try and make things happen. But more than anything is I just want to learn. I never want to stop learning about the sport. Extremely passionate about it. And so I put my name out there whenever I can. And it's carried me on, you know, to working with a lot of other nine-man coaches for our Saskota Bowl All-Star team when we play a team versus North Dakota. It's helped me get into a Senior Bowl and be able to learn from those guys. And most recently, as well as being a part of U-17 when we went to Dallas last year for the International Bowl and part of the U-18 team there this summer. So that being able to get in on that stuff, I think, has just allowed me to really grasp what all the other coaches are doing and learn from the best in the province, really.
Got a smile on my face because you kind of started this interview talking about when you were playing, social media was basically non-existent. These kids have so many more opportunities, you know, way more than when I played and even more than when you played.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's something now that even the last couple of years has just boomed. And not only that, but, you know, football in Saskatchewan itself, we have a small community here when you look at the rest of the nation, but yet we produce some of the best football players in the country. And so I think, you know, being able for these kids to get out and do these other camps, to be able to spread film around to each other, learn from each other, you know, just watch highlight tapes, study other highlight tapes, things like that is paying off big for them.
This podcast is called Growing the Game because we want to grow the game of football in Saskatchewan. That's why we interview guys like you. So what would be your message to either, you know, a parent who's thinking about putting their kids in the sport of football and they're not so sure because of concussions and injuries and everything like that, or, you know, somebody, a player that's really excited but kind of uneasy about going out for football? Why should parents put their kids in football, and why should a prospective athlete say, hey, you know what, I want to give football a shot?
You know, in my opinion, and I know a lot of other coaches and past players you'll talk to, they'll always say that football is the biggest life game you'll ever find. And I know firsthand, you know, football teaches you how to work hard, how to make goals, how to set those goals and work towards them. And, you know, for anybody that's afraid of injuries or the sport like that, even the last 5 years, the precautions taken to make this game safe is really coming along, and it just keeps advancing here now. And, you know, there's no other sport like it. You put that many guys together on one team and try and get them going in a common direction towards a common goal, and it really teaches you a lot about yourself and how to live life, you know, later on in general.
Hey, man, how much did nine-man football help you as an athlete when you transitioned to the 11-man game and then, like you said, your cup of coffee in the CFL? How much did nine-man football make you a better athlete, you think?
Nine-man's a very interesting game because it does cross over to American football very, very easy. You know, some of the concepts you run on defense as far as zone coverages are very similar to 11-man. Some of your positions as far as tight ends and how you use them are very similar to 11-man. And so, you know, guys that are playing nine-man out in the province there, they're really getting exposed to a kind of game that not a lot of Canadian players are seeing that often. And so I think if they decide to move on to secondary or something like that, and it's they have the choice between one or the other, you know, that nine-man game is really opening their eyes as to what other kinds of football there are, but also just how to learn more about the sport.
You know, wins and losses are great. Championships are great. What do you hang your hat on as a coach? Like, what would you hang your hat on? By that, I mean, what makes you the proudest? Is it the championships, or is it watching a kid who comes out, doesn't know the sport, and kind of develops into that athlete?
The big thing I love is just the people that get excited, coaches, players, fans, parents, and get excited about what we're doing. The big thing, yeah, I mean, you get a young guy who wants to come out and he'll tell you flat out, I don't know anything about football. I've never watched a game. I've listened to the writers on the radio, but he wants to learn. And by the end of the season, you know, you've converted him into somebody there that's been able to play a position and contribute to the team. And even coaches, you get guys that you ask to come help coach and they say, hey, I played a couple years in high school. You know, I've been to lots of Rider games, but I don't know what I can do for him. So, you know, that's fine. We'll just learn here as a group. And, you know, I think that's the big thing is I really, really enjoy just seeing that come along and just passing on that passion that I have.
That's the head coach of the Shaunavon Shadows. Wait, let me correct myself. That's the head coach of the nine-man provincial football champion, Shaunavon Shadows. Two out of the last 3 years, Garrett Glassroot, our guest on Growing the Game. Thanks for this, my friend.
Thank you very much.
And our Growing the Game podcast is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair in Regina. Go see Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff and the gang over there. They do great work, and thanks to them for supporting this Growing the Game venture. Hey, one guy who grew up in Regina and went on to three Grey Cup championships, our friend Paul Waldo. And Paul, Mitch Picton's season wrapped up with the Rams, but he signs a deal with the Riders to join their practice roster, and he's in Ottawa practicing with the team right now. You can speak to this. How cool is it to be a Regina boy and get to play with the Rough Riders?
It's what you play for, I think, when you're a kid. You know, you envision and you dream. Not only getting a chance to play pro ball, but be able to do it here in your backyard. Wearing the green and white where your family can watch you every day, and you don't really got to go too far. There's nothing like it. Kudos to him. I mean, he's a great player. You know, he's got the size, he's got the build, he's a good route runner. And obviously it shows the type of potential that they see in him. I mean, the kid hasn't even been out of football for a couple of weeks, and he's rolling already.
Yeah, definitely one of those Regina Ram receivers. It's been known to produce receivers here, the university here, and he's another one on a long list of them. Getzlaff rejoining the team. It's kind of, we talked about this after the game, you and I. It's kind of one of those, this team almost has like a destiny feel, doesn't it, to it? You got Kevin Glenn, who started his career here, and then he comes full circle, and he's back here, and maybe a chance to win his first championship. You got Getzlaff, who, you know, well, was in Hamilton, but started his official career here in Regina, and he comes back here. You got a guy like Mitch Picton. They just kind of seem like a team of destiny.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you start off with a guy like Kevin Glenn. I mean, you know, there isn't a single thing to not like about him. And I think everybody and their dog in this league, regardless of who you cheer for, really hopes that Kevin Glenn gets that championship at some point in time in his career. And obviously he's getting older, and he doesn't really look like it, you know, the way he's been playing lately. But you just really want more than anything for him to be able to experience that.
Yeah, Paul Waldo joining us here, a winner of three Grey Cup champs, and he knows Mark Trestman well. We'll get into that. Another guy we could throw in there is Jovan Johnson. This team has 12 guys over the age of 30 years old, so there's some desperation for them, too. They haven't won a Grey Cup. A guy like Bakari Grant had an excellent game in Ottawa. He's lost three of the last four Grey Cups.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a tough go, even a guy like Bakari. I just think back to, his first year in the league in 2011, I believe, and he came, it was the Eastern Final. Nobody really knew who he was, and I think he took our poor corner, Seth Williams, there for about four touchdowns, and they ended up winning in the double overtime match. And Bakari's just one of those guys that's been around the league. He's a veteran guy. Being in three of the last four Grey Cups, you want guys like him to win, and a guy like Jovan Johnson who still continues to play at a high level, you know.
What's impressing you about the Rough Riders the most here on this run?
You know what? That they're finally putting all their athletic ability to use, especially when you look back at this game this past weekend. They essentially played a perfect game. The offensive line dominated the line of scrimmage. They rushed for, almost 200 yards there. They created four turnovers on defense. They didn't turn the ball over at all. I mean, one in the special teams game or phase of things. I mean, it's just so impressive to finally see them put it all together, you know?
This is interesting because you were on a sideline for a few years with Mark Trestman. Mark Trestman with an extra week to prepare, and his team has lost two games against the Rough Riders. You and I know it's very tough to beat a team three times in one season.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, it's almost a human nature thing because, the team winning always goes in with the same game plan that worked for them the first time, and the team obviously that has the loss, goes in there and then restructures and revamps. And like I said, Coach Trestman, obviously, my first 3 years with them, we went to three straight Grey Cups and, we win the division and we play for that one game. And the one thing he does is he just prepares. He's a mad scientist. He's so articulate in what he does, and that team's going to be prepared. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders are going to be playing a much better team than they did last week.
And they're much more athletic up front defensively, especially on that defensive line. For that reason, do you think we see Brandon Bridge in this game?
Absolutely. I think it's a premeditated thing right now that they're going to have some packages for Brandon Bridge to get in there to keep that defense on their heels a bit and not make them one-dimensional. We talked about, obviously, that front. I mean, you can argue that a front seven with Bear Woods and when Marcus Ball is healthy is the best in the league. Victor Butler has done this thing, and he's been getting after quarterbacks. They got a good rotation inside there. So Brandon Bridge will present a different dynamic and will be able to extend plays and move out of the pocket, which will have to force the Saskatchewan Rough or the Toronto Argonaut defense to be a little bit more passive and not just pin their ears back and get pressure after a guy like Kevin.
How much do you think Coach C, Corey Chamberlain, wants to beat the Rough Riders?
More than he's probably ever wanted to win a game in his life. Corey's a fierce competitor. It's arguably said that he's more of a competitor as a coach than he is as a football player, and he's done a phenomenal job. You're looking at the number one defense in the league, best against the pass, best against the run. So they're gonna present some challenges to that Saskatchewan Rough Rider offense. And so, like I said, those boys got to basically do what they did this past weekend and go in and essentially play a perfect game.
This is Growing the Game. Couple more questions for Paul Waldo. Okay, we didn't have any show prep here, so I'm putting you on the spot, my friend. Of the four starting quarterbacks right now in the playoffs, rank me which quarterbacks in order you'd go with. The four starting quarterbacks in order.
Ricky Ray, Mike Riley, Bo Levi Mitchell, Kevin Clark.
Okay, and that's surprising. Ricky Ray, you think Ricky's got a, think Ricky's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder here as he enters the playoffs?
He sure does. And I think the one thing that Ricky Ray has really done this year more than any year is he's just been so consistent. In the years in the past, Ricky's been one of those guys that can throw the lights up the stadium and throw for 505 touchdowns, or you're able to really get a lot of pressure after him and kind of make him not very productive, And this year he's just done a good job. Coach Trestman has done a fantastic job of protecting him and allowing him to finish his throwing motions, and he's been able to extend plays. So, as much as I love Mike Riley, I think Mike Riley's got perhaps better receivers. But I think Ricky Ray has been exceptional this year. Hasn't really struggled a lot like Mike Riley did, in the middle of the season a little bit.
I have the Edmonton Eskimos being too much for the Calgary Stampeders in the West Final. How about you?
You know, I disagree.
Wow.
This has been a conversation all week, and what I think was, in the last 4 or 5 years, Calgary Stampeders go in, they win 15 games in the season. They're the best team in the regular season. They go into the playoffs, and they get stunned. They lose in Grey Cups. They lost two of the last four Grey Cups, and they just can't put it together. And I think now because they've felt that adversity earlier on in this year, I think they're gonna come well prepared. It's gonna force them to do stuff outside their comfort zone. I think they're gonna present a little bit more of a challenge to Edmonton. And I'll tell you this much. I think Winnipeg was doing a pretty good job last week. You know, didn't really like that fake punt, but I mean par for par, they did a pretty good job. They were able to run the ball really early and I think Calgary's a little bit more explosive on the offensive side, and I think they're probably going to get it all together, and this will be the game.
All right, will it be Calgary and Saskatchewan or Calgary and Toronto in the Grey Cup then, Paul?
I know we talked about this. I'd like to say it'd be Calgary and Saskatchewan, but as you're known to ask, if I was betting the house, Baldy,
mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to go Toronto, Calgary.
All right. Speaking of betting houses and houses, how do they get a hold of you if they want to get in the real estate game?
You know what? You can fire me an email at paul@homesregina.ca. You can jump on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm Paul Walder. You can give me a buzz at 306-502-5355, and then I can help you with any type of real estate needs or questions.
Three-time Grey Cup champ. He's on our Rough Rider panel there on the 620 CKRM Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And I just came up with a name for this segment. Ball and Paul on football. How does that sound?
Love that. We need that on the t-shirt, Baldy.
I'll make up a t-shirt. This is Growing the Game, and that's Paul Waldy. Thanks for this, buddy.
Thanks, Baldy. See you soon.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this segment on the Growing the Game podcast. It is growing in popularity. It is the Where Are They Now feature, where we talk to one of the legends of the game, and this guy fits that to a T. In Canada, he played with the Toronto Argonauts on maybe one of the greatest teams never to win a Grey Cup, and he appeared in two Super Bowls with the Washington Redskins, winning one and losing one the next year. He is Joe Theismann, and he joins me now. Our guest here is definitely fitting into the legends category. Joe Theismann, how are you today, Mr. Theismann?
I am doing great, Michael. Thank you.
Hey, you know what? This is a pleasure for me to talk to you, not only as a football fan, but as a broadcaster, because you've excelled in both areas. Now, in 1971, you're in the running for the Heisman Trophy, and I heard a story that the PR guy wanted you to change the pronunciation of your name to Theismann so it rhymes with Heisman. Is there truth to that?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, Roger Baldessari, our public relations director, he came to me and said, hey, look, how do you pronounce your last name? And I said, it was Theismann. He said, no, it's Theismann. I said, no, it's not. It's Theismann. He said, no, it's not. It's Theismann. I said, give me the phone. Call my dad back home in Jersey. Asked my dad how I pronounced my last name. He thought I was nuts. He told me it was Theismann. I went to Roger. I said, my last name is Theismann. I know. I just got a phone with my dad. He said, Joe, I want to tell you, there's a trophy out there called the Heisman Trophy, and we think by changing the pronunciation of your last name, you can win that trophy. And I've been Joe Theismann ever since.
And I'll tell you what, Theismann or Theismann, what a great name and what a great story. Fourth round pick of the Dolphins, also drafted by the Twins in baseball, but you come to the Argos for, I think, a salary of around $50,000 in your rookie year. Why did you come to Canada? Why choose Canada?
I think there's a couple reasons. Number one, Leo Cahill. Leo was magic when it came to landing guys. I mean, think of it. I came there, Jimmy Stillwagon from Ohio State, Outland Trophy winner. Granville Liggins, Outland Trophy winner. Jimmy Corrigal, Kent State guy, high draft pick by the Cleveland Browns. Dave Ramey, Billy Simons, Mike Eben, Paul Desjardins. I can name as many guys from the Argonaut teams that I played with as I can from the Redskin teams. And I played in Toronto for 3 years and with the Redskins for 12. And that's how close a relationship we had. And there was a great movie or a great documentary put together about the 71 club last year during the Grey Cup week that was thrills to be a part of. But, you know, I came there because it was a chance to play football. I'd run into a contract issue with the Dolphins, and they had me paying back money, which they finally resolved, but I became disillusioned with the process. I tried to negotiate my own contract, which I don't recommend to anyone, by the way, because emotions get involved. And I don't regret going to Canada one bit. Heck, I would have stayed if they'd have come up with some money.
Yeah. Hey, what was your welcome to the CFL moment, welcome to pro football moment when you got on the scene in Toronto?
Well, you know, it's really funny. Toronto at that time was just, it wasn't even just a change in football. It was a change in social things that were going on in the world. It was, you know, we were coming off of the Vietnam War at that time, at the end of the war. So there was an awful lot going on socially. You know, the big hair, the big lapels, the seersucker suits, the high soles on shoes. I mean, fashion was something. Toronto was a great fashion center. But I'll never forget my first game. I forget who it was against, but I remember getting up under center. Of course, you know, everybody can move, you know, towards the line of scrimmage. Well, I came out of United States football. So you were supposed to, you can only move one person laterally, not everybody towards the line. So I wind up getting under the huddle and under the center. I look around. Everybody starts moving. I step away from the huddle. Official throws the flag, 5-yard penalty. I said, yeah, that's terrible, isn't it? He said, no, Joe, you don't understand. They can move. You can't. So my first snap from center was actually a 5-yard penalty.
That is a great story. Joe Theismann joining us. So I did watch that documentary. It was an outstanding documentary. You guys seem like a tight-knit team. The greatest team, they say, never to win the Grey Cup. Joe Theismann, how does that rank in terms of disappointments in your career?
Oh, unbelievable. The thing that I appreciated so much about playing in the Grey Cup was, and I've played in Super Bowls. I've played in 2 Super Bowls, so I can actually draw an analogy between them. When we played in the Grey Cup, it was the eastern part of the country against the western part of the country. When you play in a Super Bowl, it's a corporate event. I felt like it seemed like more of the country was invested in what we were doing as an Argonaut football team and what was happening in Calgary as a football team. And it just seemed so different. I mean, it was an unbelievable social event. The fact that it was played in Vancouver really became a neutral site. I think if we'd have caught them on dry turf, because we were really based on speed, it would have been a different story. But I'll tell you, Michael, it's really funny. When I look at that game on tape and I see how skinny I was and how big the Stampeders were, I almost get the feeling it was a bunch of men against a bunch of boys. But yet we almost pulled it out.
Hey, you talked about Leo Cahill, the recruiter. How does Leo Cahill, the coach, rank in terms of the coaches you've had, Joe Theismann?
Leo understood people, which in my mind ranks him as a terrific football coach. You know, he alternated Greg Barton and I, which I didn't like at all. Greg would go a series, I would go a series until Greg broke his finger, and then I wound up playing in 71. And Leo basically said to me, he said, Joe, look, you know, your ego, I couldn't beat your ego down with a stick. He said, but Greg, I have to, in case I need him, I got to let him play a little bit. So that was his explanation to me. Didn't like it, but that's what Leo did. But he understood who we were as a football team. He understood the way we had to play. He understood the talent that was there. Leo was a terrific coach, a terrific guy. Leo Cahill in the 70s did more for the CFL than any single individual could possibly imagine doing. You know, he was the guy that kept it going. He was the guy that kept the name out there. And of course, when we were winning football games, it didn't hurt either.
Hey, Joe, I asked Warren Moon, Doug Flutie, and I've asked John Ryan, the current punter of the Seattle Seahawks, this. They both played in the CFL, obviously, and the NFL like yourself. Which league did you have more fun in? You kind of touched on it with the Grey Cup Super Bowl, but which league did you have more fun in?
Well, you know, it's hard for me because the 71 Toronto Argonaut team was, I defined them as a group of characters with character. The Gene Max, you know, the Tony Moros, the Mel Prophets, the Dave Ramies, I mean, the Leon McQuays. You know, it was a collection of almost misfits of guys that did everything they could to sort of challenge the system. I had the same thing with the Redskins in 1982, and really in the 70s when it was George Allen. It was a very veteran team that basically ran itself. And then it was the 82 Redskins was a group of characters with character again, with John Riggins and the Smurfs and the Fun Bunch and, you know, all these different types of labels, the Hogs. So it's hard for me to say which one I had the most fun. I had 15 years of fun, Michael, to be honest with you. I loved training camp. I love playing the game. I love Sunday afternoons, Thursday nights, Friday nights, Monday nights. I love going to work in the morning. I spent 40 years in professional football between playing and broadcasting. And let me tell you something, there's nothing better.
Yeah, no, everybody knows what happened and how your career went, and I don't want to go through the same tired questions. But I got to ask you this, because injuries are a big concern, especially head injuries. Do you think we're at a point, though, now where we've made football as safe as we can make it? I mean, there's a natural danger that comes with the sport of football. Do you not agree?
I do, and I don't know how much further you can go other than turning it into flag football, than where we are. All you can do is make players aware of it, but then, you know, if I have to get a guy on the ground, if I'm a safety and I'm headed for a wide receiver and I want to try and separate him from the ball, I'm going to hit him. You know, I think what we're starting to see, I don't know what it's like in the CFL, but in the NFL, we're starting to see a lot more safeties and DBs going low on people. I promise you, the receivers would much rather take a shot in the chest or a shot up high, because, you know, the chances of a concussion, you know, you can come back possibly from that, I would think, which I have. You could come back in a week or 2 weeks. You get your knee taken out, your career's over.
Hey, as you know, as you're coming off the sidelines there, I heard an interview from you, and it was an interesting quote. You said, one part or one version of Joe Theismann died on the field that day, but another one was reborn. Just kind of touching that a little bit, because I found that an interesting statement.
Well, I had become, with the success that I enjoyed in professional football, I had become a very self-serving individual, a very egotistical individual. There's one thing to have confidence in what you do. There was another thing to, I think, feel the way I felt. And I felt like, you know, the world revolved around me. And then all of a sudden, that world that I thought revolved around me was gone. Now, I mean, I was defined by football, and all of a sudden it wasn't gone. So I basically had to redefine who I was as a person.
What do you remember about the team, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and the place Saskatchewan, Joe Theismann?
It was always, you know, it was always in green and white, so much green and white, and it was damn cold, okay? That's all I can tell you. It was just a cold, cold place to play, Saskatchewan.
All right, speaking with Saskatchewan Roughrider Mitch Picton. Now, if that name sounds familiar, of course, longtime U of R Rams receiver. How does it sound when I say Saskatchewan Roughrider, Mitch?
It sounds pretty good. Happened a little quicker than I expected. I kind of just expected to be back for training camp next year, but I got the call on Monday night, so yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so nobody ever wants to see their season come to an end, and your Ram career comes to an end, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but yeah, that's a nice little kind of present, hey?
Yeah, I feel like our Ram season ended a little earlier than we wanted to, so I wasn't really ready to be done playing ball for the year, so this is a nice little treat that I get to come and get a couple weeks in.
Yeah, and you're not going into a regular season game. You're in the Eastern Final, one step away from the Grey Cup. Have you pinched yourself yet? Like, it's like things are coming at you fast here.
Yeah, it's kind of coming to coming. I'm realizing that this is a pretty huge game, so. Yeah, it's exciting, and I'm just trying to do everything I can to get the guys ready to go here.
Tell me what the mood is around there. Guys pretty upbeat, pretty excited?
Yeah, it's a high energy place for sure right now. Guys are fired up. Guys are excited to get on the field on Sunday.
What's it mean to a Regina boy to wear the green and white of the Saskatchewan Roughriders?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. You grow up in Regina, you grow up a football fan, and naturally you love the Riders, so to be able to be drafted by this club and to now be here is it's pretty incredible.
Which Rider did you grow up emulating and wanting to be like?
Geez, there's a few, but I think guy that I watched a lot and he's here now, I guess, is Chris Getzlaf. I liked him. He was only here for a short time, most of the time in BC, but Jason Claremont was another one that I loved to watch. Just guys like that
they were good guys and great players in the league.
And like you, Regina Rams, that's kind of neat. Hey, Chris Getzlaff, he comes full circle. He's back here, and now you're a teammate of his.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. We were talking about that this morning in practice.
Yeah, that's neat. Okay, what's your first football memory, Mitch Picton? And I guess, first off, when did you start playing football?
It would have been in around grade 5, I think. So around 12, mm-hmm. maybe?
Yeah.
That's when I would have started playing tackle football, but played touch kind of from the moment that I could walk. So
yeah,
that was about it. But my first football memory would be, it would have been the Adam Bears, when I guess I would have been in grade 5. It was in the city championship, and we were down a touchdown. And it was last drive of the game, and Noah ended up throwing me a post pattern for a touchdown to send it to overtime, and then we ended up winning in overtime. So that would have been my first memory of the game, for sure.
How tough is it on you to have that part of your football life done, playing with your cousin Noah? You guys had such chemistry out there, obviously. Like you said, you've been throwing the ball with each other since you were young kids. To have it end like it did, how tough was that for you? Was that the toughest thing about your Ram career ending, other than the fact you didn't win a Vanier Cup?
Yeah, that was definitely one that hit me pretty hard, is that I could be done playing with him. You never know with the draft coming up here.
Yeah.
High hopes for that guy. But, it was tough. I mean, it's been a very, very long time that me and him have been playing football together at a high level. So, it was tough. We had some great chemistry. I couldn't ask for a better person or a better quarterback to spend literally my entire career with. So, it was tough, but, I think there's bright things in the future for both of us. So
something
to look forward to.
That's kind of the quirky thing about the CFL. Mitch Picton has a realistic chance of continuing his football career, and it's going to be quite a thing for Noah Picton to get a chance, and not because of his height, it's because of his birth certificate, because the Canadian quarterback, you know, we're starting to see it with your teammate Bridge now and Andrew Buckley, but it'd be nice if a guy like Noah Picton would get a legitimate shot. He can throw the ball, man. His anticipation of defense is second to none. I don't care what his birth certificate says.
Yeah, that was another thing we kind of talked about this morning as well. But I think that things will change in the league with the quarterback potentially counting towards the ratio. So that'd be a step in the right direction, because it should just be treated as another position, in my opinion. And if the guy's got the talent and can get the job done, then there's no reason why he shouldn't be counting towards the ratio. But with Noah, he like you said, he's got incredible anticipation of what defenses are trying to do to him and stuff like that. So, I think he should get a shot at the next level.
Hey, Mitch Picton, how do you want your Rams career to be remembered?
I would have liked it to be remembered with a few more playoff wins.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, just a hardworking guy that had some success on the field and loved being around his teammates and loved being in the organization.
That's Mitch Picton. Thank you very much for this, Mitch.
Thanks, appreciate it.
I'd like to thank all our guests for joining me on the Growing the Game podcast. I'd like to thank you, the listener, for tuning into this. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, Mako Collision Repair in Regina. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, go see the good guys, Alan and Joe, and their great group over there at Mako Collision Repair. We'll talk to you next week.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.